Hi, Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Ashley Flowers.
And I'm Britt.
And today, I want to tell you about a story I had been following for years, a missing person case that unfolded into a murder. This is Zeb Quinn's story. Our story takes place in Asheville, North Carolina, right after Y2K. Everyone thought the world was going to end, but for one family, their world came crashing down 2 days after the new year. On January 2nd, 18-year-old Zeb Quinn was supposed to be home after working a shift at Walmart. He got off around 9 o'clock, about the same time that his mother got off at the hospital where she worked, and she tried to page him to see if he wanted to get a late dinner, but he never returned her page. At first, she just figured he's busy. Maybe he stayed a little bit late, no big deal. She would see him when she got home. But she didn't see him when she got home. So she paged him again. And again, she got no response. This was so unlike Zeb. I mean, he was 18 and he didn't have to ask her permission to stay out late, but he was a courteous kid. He didn't want her to worry. So if his plans changed, he would always tell her. And if she tried to reach him, he would always call back. By 10:30, her anxiety had taken form to a big knot in her stomach, and she decided to call Walmart. She'd put it off until now because she didn't want to be that overbearing mom, but she can't shake the feeling that something is wrong. And her fears are confirmed when they tell her that Zeb clocked out around 9, just like he was supposed to, almost an hour and a half ago. His mom starts calling around to other people, anyone who might be with him or know where he would be, but she doesn't have any luck. That night is a sleepless one for her. She tosses and turns and wakes up every hour or so, just hoping Zeb will walk in the door any minute, but he doesn't. By 3 p.m. on the 3rd of January, this is the next day, she cannot wait anymore. So she files an official missing persons report. And it's not like she can just sit there after the report is filed, like that's just gonna magically bring him home. She has to keep looking. She and Zeb's older sister drive all over town looking for him or his car, but it's a fruitless exercise. He is nowhere to be found. Zeb seems to have vanished into thin air and there's no trace of him. Until a phone call comes into Walmart on January 4th. The manager answers in the electronics department where Zeb worked. The person on the other end says, "Hi, this is Zeb Quinn, and I'm calling to let you know I won't be in. I'm sick today." Now, right away, this sends chills down the manager's spine. She's worked with Zeb for 2 years. She knows Zeb. She knows his voice. And whoever is on the other end of the line is not Zeb Quinn.
Oh my God.
She tried to stay calm and keep this person talking. So she asks, "Who is this again?" And they say, "Zeb Quinn, and I won't be into work today." So she probes a little bit further, acting like she really isn't familiar with Zeb. And she says, "So what department do you work in?" And they say, "Electronics." And like, okay, you got that right. "Well, what shift are you scheduled to work today?" And it's just silence. This person doesn't know, because this person isn't Zeb. When the call ended, the manager was thinking on her feet and she was quick to act. She ran to an outgoing phone and dialed star 69 to trace the call, which maybe some of our millennials don't get, but back in the day, and still now, you can hit star 69 before there was caller ID and it would call back the number that just called you. So it rings and rings, and when the line is picked up, she learns that she had actually called back the Volvo Construction Company. And this feels wrong because the people at Walmart know somebody who works at Volvo, someone who was also a part-time employee at Walmart, someone who knew Zeb Quinn, and that's someone who had left with Zeb the night he went missing, a man named Robert Jason Owens. This information is relayed to Zeb's mom, who tells police. And obviously, police want to talk to Robert. Some people, if you look online, might call him Jason from his middle name, but we're just going to call him Robert in the story. And Robert tells them, yes, I did make the call, but only because Zeb asked me to. And I didn't ask why. I was just doing a solid for a friend. And yes, they did leave together that night. Zeb wanted to buy a new car, and Robert knew of this place outside of town, so they were going to go take a look at it after hours.
It seems weird to go look at a car at like 10 o'clock at night, right?
Yeah, like obviously you aren't going to go to like actually buy it, but maybe they just wanted to put eyes on it without a salesman like pressuring them or something. But this is not even the weird part of Robert's story. His story is that they left Walmart and drove separately to go check out the car, with Zeb following Robert. Now, we know this part is true because the two men are seen around 9:15 on surveillance video walking into a gas station convenience store. Zeb and Robert buy sodas, then they leave, each getting into their own respective cars and driving off. In the video, Zeb doesn't seem worried or distressed by any means, and this is where Robert's story takes a strange turn. He says that after they got back on the road, suddenly Zeb starts flashing his lights at Robert, a sign that he thinks he wants him to like pull over, so he does. Zeb pulls over two behind him, and he comes rushing to Robert's vehicle. He's totally frantic, and he asks Robert if he has a cell phone. He says, I just got a page. I have to answer this right now. And Robert's like, no, I mean, I don't have anything, but there's a gas station up the road. Like, they probably have a payphone. You should go there. So Zeb says, okay, I'm going to go. I'll be right back. Robert tells police that about 10 minutes went by before Zeb's car pulled up behind him again. But Zeb was so distracted and so distraught by whatever had happened that he actually rear-ended him. He gets out of the car and tells Robert he's so sorry, but he, you know, can't deal with the accident tonight. He can't go look at the car. Something important has come up, and he will have to get with him tomorrow to settle up with regards to the accident. Zeb drives away, and he's never seen again.
Oh my God.
Investigators aren't sure what to make of this story. It obviously shows Zeb exhibiting some super weird behavior, but can they trust Robert's account? They decide they need to look at him a little more, and what they find is very concerning. When investigators talk to Robert's manager at Volvo, they learn that the morning after Zeb's disappearance, Robert had actually called into work and said that he was going to be late because of a car accident.
You mean him getting rear-ended by Zeb?
No. He says that he was in another accident that morning pulling out of the Waffle House parking lot. And this one, apparently he had like pulled out and ran into another car. And it was so severe that he ended up having to go to the hospital because he had a cracked rib and a mild head injury.
Whoa.
Yeah, now first, like kind of suspicious that you got into two accidents in less than 24 hours. More suspicious that there is minimal damage to your vehicle, yet you have a cracked rib and a head injury. And even more suspicious that police could not find an accident report of any kind to corroborate this story.
What a weird and elaborate lie, though. I mean, the whole thing he made up about Zeb hitting him, then making a call, then leaving, like, why? Say you went to the gas station and then he left, right? It's just weird.
It's super weird.
Were they ever able to confirm that there was even a page? It seems like that would be a super easy way to see if this was made up or not.
So they can try, but of course, this is real life and this is back in the 2000s, so it's going to take some time to pull the records. And until they have those, they don't really have anything else on Robert. So they have to start tracking down other potential leads. And there's one lead that stands out. Zeb had a love interest at the time that he went missing, but his relationship with her was, like, complicated, to say the least. So just recently, Zeb had met a young woman named Misty at a Christmas party. They quickly became friends, but Zeb's friends and family say it felt like it was a lot more to him. He was infatuated with her. Now, this alone is not motive for anyone to harm him, but the family has more to tell police. Shortly after they met and had been talking on the phone, she admitted to Zeb that she actually had a boyfriend and a baby. But the family said this didn't deter him at all. He would still do anything he could to be around her, take any risk to talk to her on the phone. And they were talking more and more. On New Year's Eve, they actually both stayed in to talk on the phone. And this wasn't going unnoticed by Misty's boyfriend, a boyfriend that Misty told Zeb was abusive. I think Zeb liked Misty. He probably felt protective of her and wanted to save her. And he started to worry about her because in the 2 days following New Year's Eve, the 2 days leading up to his disappearance, he didn't hear from her. And he told coworkers that he's worried about her because of her boyfriend. So one day, this is again, like right leading up to his disappearance, he decided to try calling her, but he broke his own rule. He forgot to use *67 to block his number. So again, back in the day, *69 would call somebody back. *67 would block your number from somebody. So he forgot to use it so her boyfriend would be able to trace the call back to him. He hung up the phone and right away he said, "I am in big trouble now."
Okay, so if he hadn't talked to Misty and was worried about her, maybe the page was from her and something was wrong. That would make sense why he was so frantic, right?
Possibly, but at this point, police still don't know. All they could do was talk to Misty, who totally denied any kind of romantic relationship with Zeb. She said, "We were just friends. Maybe Zeb felt more, and yeah, I knew him, but we were really just acquaintances." They ask her where she was on the 2nd when Zeb went missing, and she says she was at her parents' house with her boyfriend and their baby, but there was another guest there. And maybe it's just a weird coincidence, maybe not, but it was Zeb's aunt, Ina, that was with him. Now, Ina and Misty's mom were planning to go into business together and open up a restaurant. Everyone who was at that house that night confirms the same story. They were all together. Now, I should note that Zeb's mother says that Ina is Zeb's aunt on his dad's side, and she alleges that Zeb wasn't really close with anyone on that side of the family. They had divorced long ago, and he just wasn't as close with them as he was with his mom's side. So this is a little weird, right? Like, what are the odds? Asheville isn't a tiny town, but according to his mom, they weren't that close, and maybe there are just, like, pockets of the community that are, like, very interconnected.
It seems so unlikely, though.
Well, yeah, I agree. So maybe I could buy that this was a weird coincidence, except it gets weirder. About this time, police get the records for Zeb's pager. A page did, in fact, come into him about the time Robert said it did. So his story wasn't made up, or at least not all of it. The page was from his Aunt Ina's home.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Now, she claims she wasn't home. Remember, she says she's with Missy's family, and Missy's family says she was there.
Yeah.
But the records don't lie. Someone paged Zeb from that house. So if not her, then who? And who did Zeb call back, and why was he so upset about all of this? Unfortunately, these are all questions we won't have answers to, but his aunt's behavior just gets more strange from there. A little while after there's this unexplained page from her house, she tells police that her house was broken into that night. Like, again, not on the day that it happens or the day that she finds out it happens. Like, she tells them this after Zeb's been missing, after they have the phone records. And she says nothing was taken, but some picture frames were moved. And speculation from the public has been that she made up this accusation to explain away the page. But then I heard later on, she went back on that too and said, "Oh no, I never said that my house was broken into." Like, all of her actions are just super weird. If it was her, what could she have said that upset him so much? And if it wasn't her, who was it? At this point, there are lots of questions, but few answers. And without any new leads coming in, the case feels like it's going cold quickly. Until 2 weeks into the investigation, when a giant clue pops up that just adds even more mystery to this story. By now, Zeb's mom had to return to work at the hospital. One night after her shift, she gets a call from someone who worked in medical records. And this was a person who'd gone to school with Zeb, knew his car, knew he was missing. And this person tells his mom, "I saw his car when I was coming into work today. It is parked at the restaurant adjacent from the hospital. It's like close to the road and has its headlights on." So his mom, of course, rushes right over, calls the authorities to take a look, and she's thrilled that they finally have his car, but she is sure that this just means something bad has for sure happened to him and he wouldn't be coming home. Like everything in this case, it just gets weirder. Right away, they take note of the positioning, right near the road with the lights on, like I mentioned, but on the back window, it looks like a picture has been drawn in lipstick.
Okay, I'm not good at Pictionary, but it looks like an exclamation point and maybe a pair of lips?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's hard to see, but I've heard that there is another exclamation point on the other side of the lips.
Okay.
But they don't have no idea what to make of this. Like, this definitely wasn't on his car before. This isn't something he had ever written. It's not something he would write. So what does this mean? Does it have anything to do with like the relationship he had with Misty? Does this imply that it was a woman because it's lipstick? Is it someone trying to make you think it's a woman because it's lipstick?
It just brings up more questions. Yeah.
Again, yeah, more questions. Now, when they look inside the car, you're probably getting sick of me saying this, but it gets weirder. So first off, the seat is pushed up farther than how Zeb would keep it, meaning that someone who was shorter than him was probably driving the car.
Or someone could have moved it after the fact.
True. I mean, again, with the lipstick, maybe someone is trying really hard to point in the direction of a female to divert attention. Or maybe it's just really a female. Like, we don't know. But what they also find in the car is several empty drink containers. They find hairs. They find a jacket that wasn't Zeb's. They find a plastic hotel key card. And wait for it, they find a puppy.
What? Did Zeb have a dog? I always remember the dogs in cases, and I do not remember you mentioning a dog at this one.
Yeah, the thing is, he didn't have a puppy. No one in his life had a puppy.
But where did the puppy come from?
Honestly, this is one of the biggest mysteries in this case. It was a 3-month-old, like, black-looking lab, and everyone wants to know, like, did the dog belong to somebody who moved his car? Or, and this is like you'll see a lot on the internet, like one of the prevailing theories, did someone put the puppy in there to ensure that the car would get more attention? Like an abandoned car could go for a couple of days, but if somebody sees a puppy locked in a car, they often call for help right away. And I mean, considering they left the lights on too, someone wanted this car found.
Yeah, lights on, parked really close to the road, and then a puppy?
Yeah, I mean, it's just begging for attention.
So I totally get that someone could easily try and throw the cops off with the lipstick and moving the seat. But for a second, let's pretend like it actually is a woman who drove the car. Other than Misty, is there anyone in his life that they were looking at as a suspect?
Not that I know of. And to be totally clear, they never named her as a suspect. They did collect hair and DNA from a female back in 2009 that, from the Charlie Project page at least, they apparently report that it was Misty, but I don't know for sure because in other reports it just says some unknown female. But whoever it was, obviously nothing came from that DNA in 2009, and no one was named a suspect as a result of that. Now, if it was Misty and they took her DNA and hair, it was because she had been on their radar for one other reason after Zeb's car was found. After the car was found, someone came forward and said, "I totally saw the car driving downtown after Zeb went missing. I knew the police were looking for the car, so I took down as much of the license plate as I could, and I made sure to get a good description of the driver."
Hold up. So they saw the car after Zeb disappeared, but before it was found.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't call it in until after it's found?
Right. And it's a little fishy for everyone, not just you. Like, they have a description of the driver, and the description that they give looks an awful lot like Misty. But because they waited to give this info until after the car was already found, a lot of people discredit this altogether. So forget the hairs, forget Misty. Police have two things that they think could lead them to a suspect. They have the hotel key card and they have this puppy. So with the hotel key card, they're thinking maybe he met somebody, you know, either the night he went missing and the days he went missing, or even before. Maybe it might give them an idea of who he was meeting in a hotel. But there was nothing on the card, like it was totally just white. And they went from hotel to hotel to hotel in town and couldn't find anyone that claimed that that key card belonged to their hotel. So it was a total dead end. They tried the same thing with the puppy. They went to breeders, they went to shelters, looking for anyone who would have like sold or adopted out a puppy in the last couple of days. Again, it was only 3 months old. It could barely leave its mother. And they have no luck with that either. And like in so many cases we've covered, this one goes cold. Now, people from the case pop up in the news here and there. All the DNA stuff with Misty happened in 2009. But even before that, Robert actually had gotten in trouble with the law back in 2001. This is just like a year after. Asheville law enforcement had tried to pull him over for a routine traffic stop that turned into a high-speed chase. It turns out Robert was driving impaired, and it literally turns into a shootout where he's got his gun out of the window shooting behind him at the officer chasing his car.
What?
Yeah, they were finally able to corner him, apprehend him, and when all was said and done, he was convicted and sentenced to 4 years for his actions. Investigators in Zeb's case wanted to speak with him while he was in prison. He's always remained on their radar, but his lawyers will not allow it. So years go by. They still work the case when they can, track down leads when they get them, but nothing solid is hitting. And nothing in this case shakes loose until 2015, when the case breaks because of two other murders. When a young couple named Christy and JT Codd didn't show up for their planned visit to Mississippi to see Christy's dad, he reported them missing to police. That wasn't like them at all. And this was March 15th of 2015. The same day, someone was calling into police to tell them that they saw someone doing something strange. And this is like the biggest moral, I think, of the story is you have to, you know the old saying, see something, say something. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many emails I get from listeners that's like, oh my God, I saw something so crazy. And I'm like, well, did you tell police? And they're like, no, it's probably nothing. You guys, if you see something, it's literally their full-time job to go check it out. The whole reason this case broke is because someone saw something and said something. So what this person sees is a man was using their private dumpster to unload these large, heavy trash bags. Well, when police go and check it out, they found that inside the bags were items from the Codds who were missing. And it didn't take them long to realize that the man dumping the bags had a familiar name, Robert Jason Owens. By the 16th, they had arrested Robert for the murders of Christy, JT, and their first unborn baby girl that they were going to name Skylar. She was 5 months pregnant at the time. Now, Robert decided to make a deal, and in exchange for taking the death penalty off the table, he agrees to confess and plead guilty. He had killed them on March 12th on their property. Now, the police would never find the bodies because he dismembered them and burnt them in a wood-burning stove. Though their entire remains were never recovered, police were able to find enough in that wood-burning stove to confirm his story was true. As for motive, though, Robert says this is all an accident. His story, at least what I've read in a couple of news articles, say that his truck had gotten stuck and they were trying to push him out and he accidentally ran over them because he was driving impaired. Now, this is totally possible and it would explain it because he says, it was an accident. I freaked out. I dismembered them and got rid of them. Here is my total opinion, but what does not make sense to me about this is why is the 5 month pregnant woman pushing your car?
Because it's stuck. Yeah.
She should be the one behind the wheel. Like I don't see her. Again, I didn't know her. Maybe she was like a can do person, but even I'm like a can do it kind of girl. I'm not going to do it 5 months pregnant. It doesn't make sense.
None at all. And it just seems like, and we've talked about this in other cases, like, even if it was an accident, like, why wouldn't you just say it? Like, why is the next step this looks bad. I should dismember and burn their bodies. I don't get it.
I mean, I don't know how impaired he was, what he was on, how messed up he was, how logical of like a next step that was for him. I mean, again, nothing about this makes sense. I mean, did he do that before? Was this just like his go-to of like, this is how you erase somebody? So I don't think the story that he gave was a real story. I don't know what the real motive was. Maybe it was money. Does he even remember? Again, maybe he was so impaired, he doesn't really recall all of this. He just has like flashes.
Yeah.
Either way, when Robert was in jail, he allegedly told some lawyers the entire story of what happened to Zeb. He said a family member killed him and then he dismembered him and burnt his remains just like he did the Cods.
Oh, wait, a family member. Does he mean a member of Zeb's family or his own?
Okay, so it didn't say. And the way it reads, it reads to me like Robert's family, but Zeb has that fishy aunt in the mix, so I can't say for sure.
If it wasn't, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Whatever else he said in the interview caused law enforcement to stop the interview and go search in a place called Bent Creek. Whatever they did or did not find in Bent Creek is unknown, still to the public today. But whatever they got from there and or from that interview, by July 10th, 2017, a grand jury returned an indictment for Robert, charging him with first-degree murder in the case of Zeb Quinn.
So how? Why? Where? I have all of the questions, Ashley.
So do a lot of people. The most recent stuff I could find was from like March of 2018, and everything said that he was supposed to be going to trial in October, but there haven't been any updates. So I don't know if it got postponed. I don't know if he pled guilty. I am totally lost and at this point just waiting for updates. And I feel like we're just missing a piece. Like, I think there's a lot pointing to Robert's involvement, even the way he described killing the Cods, whether it's real or not. The whole thing about him having an accident with his truck while impaired, him driving while impaired back in 2001, him telling the story about the car accident in 2000, it just all feels really similar. But again, I go back to why. Like, it could have been for money. The Cods might have had cash if that's how they were planning on paying him. Like, he was a contractor on their property. Maybe Zeb might have had cash if he was planning to buy a new car, but did he do it all alone? Like, police could not find any link from Robert to Misty or Robert to Misty's boyfriend or to Aunt Ina. So was all of that really like a red herring? The whole like pager, the call from Aunt Ina's house, like, it just seems crazy that that wouldn't be unrelated. And why was Zeb's seat still pushed up? Was the lipstick and the puppy? Like, what was all of that about? I still have so many questions about this case. Questions we won't get answers to until there's a trial. And right now, Robert is the only one who is charged and going to trial.
Oh my gosh. My world is upside down right now. I don't know heads from tails. I can't even think.
Well, I mean, you know, here's just another mystery. He's the only one going to trial, despite the fact that some people think he had an accomplice. Because after he was arrested for the Cod murders, his trailer was burnt down in a fire that authorities called suspicious.
Okay.
So there could be someone out there that's helping him cover his tracks. One or more people who could know what happened to Zeb Quinn. Just an interesting note for all the Puppet people out there. The puppy that was found in the car actually ended up getting adopted by one of the agents that was investigating Zeb Quinn's case. And they actually took like hair and DNA from the dog because the dog's, you know, older now. And they're saving it because they say, you know, one day this could be evidence or like a link to somebody if we can trace this dog back to a breeder or even hairs found in somebody's house years and years later. So
I'm going to call it now. The Puppet saves the day.
She might. You never know. You guys, if you aren't already, don't forget to follow us on social. We are on Instagram at Crime Junkie Podcast.
And on Twitter at Crime Junkie Pod.
Thanks for hanging in. We'll see you back soon with a brand new episode. Crime Junkie is an Audio Chuck production. So what do you think, Chuck? Do you approve?